All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And have you ever wondered how childhood friends turned $300,000 into a thriving real estate portfolio of 18 units in just 2 years? Well, tonight, my guest, Philip Nago, one third of the dynamic trio behind the Left Side Ventures, is here to unravel their secrets behind their rapid success using strategic partnerships and the innovative Burr strategy. Philip, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Awesome. Thanks, Bryce, for having me on the podcast. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, so let's start with the dynamic trio. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so childhood friends since grade eight. I've actually known some of them since, you know, before grade eight as well. And so really good friends. We played lots of sports together, stayed in touch throughout high school, university, and post life as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of how we met each other. We actually like did a lot of like class together in high school, had a lot of like fun, and just eventually turned our passion into making money together, investing together, and it kind of just worked out that way.
Yeah. So tell me, 18 units, is that 18 single family? Is that an 18 unit apartment block? What is the composition of your portfolio that you built?
Yeah. So within our company, Left Side Adventures, we have a, we bought a 3 unit, a 6 unit, a 3 unit that's turning into a 4 unit, and then just recently bought a 5 unit that also has a warehouse that we just leased, actually. So as of December, we're going to have that leased out.
Nice, nice. So 2 years, that's quite a scale. You know, a lot of people might buy one house or no houses or maybe a handful, but 18, that's pretty aggressive. What's the driving factor in the rapid expansion of this portfolio?
I think one of the things is mainly like there's three of us, right? There's a lot of mouths to feed. I can only speak for myself, but especially in today's world, we're partnering with people, raising capital, partnering up, especially with people, especially now that capital is so limited and people, there's inflation and it's hard to qualify for mortgages. I think we soon realized, like, you know, early 2019, 2018, around there, that in order to accomplish more, you need to partner together. And I think one of the drivers aside from that was just opportunities, especially since 2021 with low interest rates and numbers just always made sense. And especially if you're doing BRRRs correctly, it just allowed you to scale. And I think just there were enough deals to continue to go. So.
So how does the three, you know, the three headed machine work? Give me a breakdown of how the three of you are able to work together and execute.
Yeah, I think initially it was kind of like freestyle, whatever people wanted to do, whatever they are good at, we leaned towards, and it was a lot of, not wasted time, but a lot of collaborating together to work on the same tasks. So if you have three people working on the same tasks, it's not that efficient, but everyone learns the same. But over time, over the 2.5 years of being in a partnership together, we started to delegate different roles. For example, you know, these people are in charge of growth and networking. These people are in charge of deal analysis. These two people are going to be in charge of asset management. These two people are in charge of financials. So looking at what people are interested in doing and also what people are inherently strong at. So it's better to have these partnerships where you can share resources and knowledge, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause it's, you know, a lot of times we go at this thing alone. So it's likely advantageous to be able to bounce these ideas that sometimes, you know, when you're alone and doing the business seem like a great idea. And the other person's like, well, have you thought about XYZ? So how do you guys balance each other out?
That's so true, right? Like, I mean, just for me myself, like I'm usually like, let's do it. Let's go ahead. Let's trust the process. And it's funny because the other two are kind of more conservative, let's say, right? So it's kind of like, it's good that we want to push ahead, but let's do some due diligence, right? And so it's nice to have this three-headed monster where, as long as you're trusting your partners, and you have a good working relationship, at the end of the day, we're all striving towards the same thing, and we want to make the best investments and have the best return on our investment. So it's good to have that trust within the team that, even though I don't agree with what you're saying, maybe you have a good point, and we should either push forward faster, or we should, take our time and do more due diligence.
Some alternative perspectives instead of being like in a bubble of our own bias, right? So as far as the current strategy you guys are deploying in the marketplace, what do you like most about it?
I think right now, we've seen people's numbers in terms of like Burr real estate investing. We're still new in as investors, still learning along the way. I think the thing that we most like about it right now is multifamily. We do multifamily value add, long distance real estate investing, so across the country. I think we just like the fact that we can double down in a particular city. We can double down in a neighborhood, and then have that economies of scale where rent increases, you issue it to all of them, right? You issue it to 3 units or 6 units. In terms of working with vendors, you can negotiate with different vendors. Okay, like this other guy down the block is a new kid or a new business, and they seem very upbeat and they seem keen, and they're offering us a discount where we have 17 or 18 units, and it's like, okay, like 10% off of, a $10,000 expense that you have becomes a lot. And if that's a $50,000 expense you have every year, those percentages add up, right? So I think economies of scale is fun.
Yeah, not so much the money that you spend, but the money you save is money earned, right? So let's look at the flip side. What maybe isn't so great about how you're approaching the market these days?
I think mainly, as you dive deeper into the numbers, and rates are high, I think is you just really need to make sure that the numbers make sense with those high rates and high expenses, and are people able to afford, and like, is your underwriting true, or is it kind of like, is your underwriting kind of like, these are just like, it's just like, is it true? Like, are we just trying to fluff up the numbers and convince ourselves that this is the best return on our investment? Is that risk worth it? And I think that's kind of like the environment in 2023, 2024 in general. And one of the things I kind of might have is as an investor is mainly rents are going up, market rents are going up, inflation is also going up, and slow down obviously, but like, can people afford those higher rents? And if they can't, we're going to probably be left with a lot of vacancies, let's say, or delinquencies and issues with that. So I think that's just in terms of like, let's just relax, let's not continue to press and buy more and more properties every year. We just need to assess and go slow, and just make sure we can survive the upcoming year, upcoming 18 months, because if we can survive that time, I'm sure all of our portfolios and pockets will be nice and heavier, and we'll be in a greater spot if we can survive, right, Bryce?
Yeah, well, there's this saying that I hear on the podcast all the time as I'm interviewing people all across North America is survive to 25. That's the motto. Survive to 25. So, yeah, I mean that you mentioned something interesting that a lot of people were crunching their numbers with interest rates that they projected a couple of years ago, not believing that the interest rates would end up where they are today. So how are you guys adjusting as a cash flowing model to kind of keep it afloat? 'Cause there's, I know a lot of guys are talking about portfolios, especially if they were in an open variable where they're actually having to like pay into their portfolio to have other people living there. So they're essentially like paying for other people to live in their houses.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Like, it's interesting in our with our experience in general, because we've gone the commercial lending route. And typically when you hear about commercial lending routes, you hear about balloon payments, something I'm just kind of learning about. And you hear about people on variable rates, and they have a giant balloon payment coming up. And I think we've been quite lucky, to say the least, with all of our positions. Like, we're paying truthfully 7.15% interest rates. Rents have steadily climbed. We've been able to issue those rent increases. We're still cash flow neutral for a couple of properties that we just acquired. Some of the larger properties we have are still in the green with the contingencies. So, and we haven't had any, capital calls. We have had fixed for a long time. We're renewing still at 7% rates. So, I think we've just been fortunate. Just, yeah, whether they are good deals or they are luck or it's just our ability to manage those deals. I think we've just been lucky to not deal with any of that yet, and we don't foresee ourselves. And I think one of the benefits of doing commercial lending is that they'll only lend you based on how the property is performing. So our LTV has always only been like 60%, right? So when we buy properties which have a lot of upside to it, they're cash flow neutral at the 7% rates. And so increasing those rents, renovating those units, turning them over, well, it would eventually get us to better cash flow position. So.
Yeah, I'd rather believe less on luck than more on the fact that you guys were proactive in looking at your portfolio and managing it, 'cause luck isn't something I would bet on. So I'm gonna go with the fact that you guys actually did the numbers properly and you're weathering the storm. So that kind of brings me to my next question is, Robert Kiyosaki calls it the unfair advantage. What is something that comes easily to you guys that maybe some other people might find difficult to do?
That's a tough one, Bryce. I don't think anyone's asked that before. Like unfair advantage, I think the thing that comes to my head in terms of just unfair advantage would probably just be being consistent. I mean, whether it's like as you can attest to on this podcast and probably in your career, like over the years, you put in the work, right? It's and you kind of address and you're consistently problem solving any issues that come up. And so there's two ways you can view those problems, right? It's either this tenant didn't pay and I'm never doing this investing thing again, or this partnership went horrible and I'm never doing real estate again. Or you can view it as a learning opportunity to consistently just learn and just move forward. And so I think we've been consistent over the last two, almost 3 years of just being consistent, even in basic things such as meeting every 2 weeks, such as, having goals, setting goals, and just continuing to plug along and just being really stubborn. So.
So with the economy of things and where you guys are going, as far as your portfolio, what are you guys doing right now to raise funds for the next projects, or are you even raising fund for the next project right now?
Yeah, so I think right now our goal for the next 3 to 6 months is to stabilize all our current projects. We have a basement conversion on the go that just started last week. We have a timeline to start turning over some units and doing some structural work to the building that we just closed in October. We'll probably be busy for 6 months. And once those two burrs are over, then we'll figure out what we want to do with our capital. So I think that's kind of like what our outlook would kind of look like. And over the time, obviously, if you can't pull off a perfect burr, you need more capital calls, right? So luckily, over the last little while, we've just been raising money mainly for renovations, right? We have pretty good underwriting, and we know that the bank will give us money back depending on how much rent we. So we just run it through our calculators. We know how much the bank will give us. And that means we can confidently say that we can pay back our investors their money plus interest. And worst case scenario, you got three individuals who are still in healthcare, engineering, software engineering field that we can just pay them back, right? And so that's what we've been doing lately in terms of raising capital. And then for the first time in October, we had our first joint venture partner where they brought in all cash. And we brought in 50% through the commercial loan. And so been able to scale through that way. And have fun with people, build relationships, make money together. Obviously, the trade-off here is that she brought cash and we're doing the work. So we are super lucky to do that and pretty much own property with no money down. So
Well, you guys are still bringing carrying the mortgage, but that's still it's big when you're raising the capital and someone's believes in you enough to put their hard-earned money, because a lot of times people have to save that money, or they've taken it a bet against their home equity line to bet with you guys. So
And
it's a big
do
vote
you
of confidence.
and for you, Bryce, like, do you think, like, right now, like, the market has shifted in terms of, like, how people should be raising capital, and
It's a
is there
good
abundance of deals
question. I
right
mean,
now?
well, the same thing I would say to the networking club that we host here. Capital not deployed loses money, right? Money in a bank account doesn't earn money, it loses money because it's not active. It's currency, right? It has to be flowing. And so I imagine that in the next 12, 24 months, while interest rates are a certain percentage, I imagine that the loans that you're going to be paying for money, private money, start getting aggressive, start asking for 4 and 5% money, because money not deployed is 0%. And there's not a lot of people asking for it. So I feel like the supply and demand economy of capital right now is beneficial for investors, but we're still all a little bit brainwashed into thinking that 15% is, worthwhile to take on a hard money loan or a loan for property. Like, you
Yeah,
might as well
15%
ask for, well, if you're doing a flip project and you're taking a risky thing like that, 15% would have been like par for the course in 2021, 2022. But if you say today, the number of people asking for that same loan is far lower. And so the money is waiting for deals and people to do them. So get aggressive, with what you're asking for as someone who's raising capital, and say, I'd love to deploy your half a million, but I'm not interested in paying more than 5% on that. And maybe you land at six, maybe you get slightly better than the bank. But to say that things are at like 10, 12, 15%, yeah, I'm sure you can get that loan. But when capital is calling me, trying to offer me money, that's a sign that the tide is shifting on the capital side, and that investors are looking to invest more than they were when things were hot, because everyone had their money out in the market. And now they're closing deals, and a lot of investors are going off the field, they're on the sidelines. So if I was raising capital, I would be trying to get the best interest rate, the most amount for the longest period of time, because property values are down. They're down in the sense that the vanity in the marketplace has evaporated. Something that was maybe worth $1 million is probably down to like 800, and it will return. It's just a matter of time. And when you look at it, you say, okay, if I can get this capital lined up when things get hot again, I'm going to pay 15 points again. I'm going to pay 10 points on that money. So you might as well lock it in for as much as you can get in as long as you can, and just go buying and pay them their interest when the market shifts in like a year or two. So when you're going out and looking for money, what have you found to be most effective to keep in touch with your investor prospects?
Honestly, we haven't raised too much money. I think we've only been able to raise, if you include the JV, like 300,000 or so. But I think it's mainly just telling people what we're doing. Because, like, talking to people on podcasts and networking with people, even like your wife or maybe your partner or your friends are just like, Bryce, stop talking about this, kind of, and that's all we like to talk about. So, those who are interested gravitate towards learning more about these things, right? So in terms of what's working, I think it's just like telling people about what you're doing, being transparent, getting on good podcasts like this in terms of sharing that knowledge, and what goes around comes around in terms of just like providing value to people. If you truly believe in the product and your investment and what you're doing, and you want everyone to know, and you want to shout on the mountaintops that real estate is the greatest investment and it can give you whatever life you desire, right? And it's a good tool for building wealth over time, then that's usually what people are gravitating towards. And especially if your investor base, I guess, are people who understand real estate and they just don't have time and they want to get in on deals. Like, I think that's a great market because you don't have to educate them too much. So I guess another piece is just educating people on, you got two types of people who are realtors, people who own real estate and they just don't have time, and that's a great base. And then you have the other people who are slightly interested, but they have no idea. So you have to educate them. And over time, since they're more educated, and they have that capital, so yeah.
Yeah, I like, there was this video I was watching the other day. It was a short, and the guy said, just have more real estate conversations. And then the other side of that was, or the, rather to add to that, no one will promote your, let's say you're a musician, no one's going to promote your band's new album more than you. So if you're, shy about promoting your new record or your new deal that you're doing, who else is going to be more excited than you, right? So I like what you said, have more conversations. And the people who actually care will pay attention, and the people who don't, won't. So with your strategy of investing, are you a find the deal first and then go and figure out how to finance it? Or do you prefer to have your money lined up and then go looking for deals?
Personally, I feel let me think about this. Personally, I feel like I kind of like to do I probably like to kind of just always talk to people and have that money lined up whenever. Not to say like, yeah, I probably would just consistently talk to people, and it just depends on what my goals is for the upcoming quarter or the year. If I know I'm going to be buying properties next year, and I know I personally, don't have the capital for it, and I'd love to partner up with someone on it, then I start raising money and just having those conversations. So just having a list of prospects, just having those conversations with people often, in the first 6 months, even 2 years, like they have capital, but it's tied up right now. And so it's just having, for me, I just label it, right? Red light, green light, yellow light, yellow light. We're coming back and I'm retouching base. I'm playing a round of golf with you. I'm just hanging out with you. You're my friend anyways. And so I know I'll revisit this conversation. And the green light people, like they want a deal now. And I'm just like, I don't have a deal now. So like, I don't have anything. Just do whatever you want with your money. And as soon as the deal comes, then we can have those conversations. But yeah, I feel like I definitely always need to have money on the sideline in case of a deal. But yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Having money on the sideline in case of a deal, because you never know what's going to come across your table. So if people want to get in touch with you, find out more about what you guys are up to, and ultimately look to invest with you, how do they find you? What should they do to find you?
We're most active on Instagram. And a little bit of TikTok. You can find us on LinkedIn as well, but Left Sided Ventures. So Left Sided Ventures, it's just left side of the brain. That's kind of what we decided to do, and it's a venture. But yeah, they can find us there. We'll have a website soon, but just depends on how soon one of my partners gets that website out. But that's the best way. Always happy to connect, network, and just share my experiences with people.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I really appreciate you being on the show, and yeah, I think people are going to get a lot out of the knowledge if they're going to be approaching a partnership. I think that there was some great stuff in there on how to navigate partnerships of two or three people, because a lot of us were out here doing it solo and we don't have to check with anyone. Maybe we have to check with our wives, but or our husbands, but ultimately, when you've got three people, there's benefits and to that sort of partnership. Definitely. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bryce. It was fun, and yeah, have to do it again sometime, hopefully. We'll see.
Yeah, go get 18 more and we'll talk about that.
Okay. Well, I take that
All
as a
right.
challenge. I'm really competitive.
There you go. So until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.